do it. You know what? What would it sound like if I were to call Jelly Durka's voicemail? Because probably she's... I don't think she's going to answer. Do you? All right. Well, if this ends with me being fired, I want to let you know I've enjoyed every minute of it. We'll try it.
Hi. You have reached the office of Mayor Jenny Durkin. I am currently out of the office in the state of Texas fighting for the rights of immigrants, but your call is somewhat important to me. If you are calling about the data that indicates that our data on the crisis of homelessness is actual data that is guiding our decisions on solutions, please press 1.
As a city, we have no plan.
That's not right. Press it back.
If you are calling about services for businesses, please press 2.
Amazon is ISIS.
This is on her voicemail?
If you are calling about the task force for business leaders to contribute ideas to address the wage gap, please press 3.
Jeff Bezos is our enemy.
If you are
calling about police-related issues, please press 4.
It is an act of war to white supremacy and terrorism with this bunker.
Someone hacked her voicemail.
If you are a member of the national media calling about my march in the Pride Parade, my status as a gay woman mayor, or my status as a Trump-hating gay female mayor, please press 0, and the receptionist will connect you to me immediately using my personal cellular number. I will call you back within 90 seconds.
Can I get there?
No, I got... Someone's hacked the thing! Someone's hacked it!
There was the sting. Ocean's 11, and The Italian Job. But why rely on fiction when we have the real thing? The Todd Herman Show presents today's episode of The Great Political Swindle.
Did I mention something about a swindle? I am really proud of my friend and colleague, Ron Upshaw, for catching on to the low-income housing swindle as it's tied to the criminal conspiracy of Sound Transit. You know that up on Capitol Hill, they're finally getting around to constructing some low-income housing. And Ron is a guy who's a big heart, big-hearted liberal. But by the way, something about Upshaw you don't know, he's also analytical and mathematical, and he's not as crazy liberal as some people think. He discovered, and this is the name of the scam, he discovered that though they have to build out some low-income units right on top of a choo-choo train station, they only have to keep them low-income for 12 years. After that, all is open. After that, they get transferred from low-income, where they get the tax credits. They get to write off more income, and it's not even all of the units. It's a minority of the units, I believe, that have to be low income. 12 years goes by, 12 years of tax write-offs. They can change the entire structure and turn that all over into luxury housing right on top of a premier address, right up the street from a premier park in a premier area of town where the rich people live. And ba-boom, now you're talking about the cha-ching. So when you track the Sound Transit criminal enterprise, know that one day the tale will be told about how the land trades went down. One day when we tear the choo-choo tracks down because people are taking drones to work and they're taking driverless cars and drones and they're working from home. One day when these people have passed on, there's going to be an accounting and you're going to learn. Why was it that Sound Transit stole an Eagles Club when they had a parking lot facility? They had a land straight across from a the train station. Straight across, they could have used that for the parking lot, which would make more sense because people park their cars, walk over to the choo-choo train. Why did they go a ways down, 3 or 4 or 5 blocks down, and take the building from the Eagles? Because someone who is an investor in Sound Transit wants that land. And don't tell me Sound Transit doesn't have investors. The Seattle Times, the Tacoma News Tribune, and local public radio. We had a local public radio reporter on the program who did a brilliant job of mapping the monies. The companies who invest their monies in these scams of Mass Transit Now and Transportation Choices Coalition, they're doing that to pad the pockets of the employees of Sound Transit who earn two times as much as the average state employee. They're doing that to buy opportunities like the low-income housing affair on Capitol Hill, like getting that building away from the Eagles. And is it Puyallup or Auburn? I always get confused. I think it's Auburn. Taking that away from the Eagles when they could have used their other land. They do that because they then pay this all back to the labor unions. They're in on the scam. And the scam is the labor unions get a 35 to 50% topped off increase on the cost of labor. One day this tale will be told. Now, what's fascinating is everything I just told you are the things we can see. Has it ever occurred to you to dig below the surface of the things we can't see? We can look at the corruption that is in front of us. We can analyze that. But below the surface, there's more of it. It's always the same. When you initially see a crime, right, you see the crime being committed. Okay, so someone robbed a store. In the buildup to that, someone probably went around and looked at stores. Someone probably illegally acquired a gun. Someone probably brought in an accomplice. All those are additional crimes. That's why they investigate beyond, oh, we saw you rob. In Sound Transit and in the lack of ethics around our state, have you ever thought about what's below the surface? What are the things that we don't see? Let me give you an example of some of the things that I'm questioning. Heroin Dan Satterberg. Yes, I have it in for him. I confess I have it in for the man. He's cowardly and he's destroying my daughter's backyard. And he's destroying your family's backyard. And something is deeply, deeply, deeply stinky here. This is a guy who's never faced an election. Oh, he's never had an opponent. He became the King County prosecutor after Norm Mailing died. He's never faced an opponent. He is as insanely liberal as anybody could be. Or I don't call it progressive because it's in fact regressive. This is a guy who is mechanically going around and decriminalizing to the point of legalizing narcotics, not just heroin, not just meth. He's also at the same time doing everything you would do to keep violent people on the streets, despite the data. Okay, despite experiencing kids put into his diversionary program who go out and murder people, that will not dissuade him. Here's what we know. We know he's corrupt. That's a fact. Because he sold the time of the King County Prosecutor's Office to the SEIU, effectively, according to media reports and according to the Freedom Foundation. Right? They did a report on this. That's the tip that we know about. But for a guy who's never faced an opponent, no one has ever done real opposition research on this guy. I fail to believe that Satterberg could be dumb enough to believe that welcoming criminal gangs into our area is a good idea. I fail to believe that Satterberg is stupid enough to believe that normalizing narcotics across King County is going to be good for anybody. I fail to believe that a guy who could get out of law school could be so dense as to believe that the citizens should not have a right to vote to block heroin from coming into their area. The corruption we see is the tip of the iceberg, in my judgment. One day, these stories are going to be told. One day, the one-party rule is going to fall. One day, we'll know the full truth about Heroin Dan Satterberg. Welcome back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. I know you're wondering what your privilege is like. We'll check it. The only radio show not hosted by a left-wing wacko. Nope. I'm your host, Todd Likas. Remember him, Tom Likas? Man, he became a filthy man. This was his bumper music. We do bumper music by request on Friday. Just real quick, regard to the segment we did on Western Washington becoming a leader in separating kids from children, or children from their parents, by way of the opioid crisis. Yep. 15 to 40% increase in number of kids going into foster care driven by heroin, driven by opioids. And you know what our area is. Courtesy of a former Republican, 3 weeks ago, he was the darling professional Republicans, Heroin Dan Satterberg, were Heroin Central. It's separating kids from their parents, putting kids into foster homes. In regard to that, from Anonymous Rebel, an email. I work for a King County Police Department. The below story happened this week. The same liberals talked as if all child-parent separations are inherently evil. Police responded to a jack-in-the-box where two adults were passed out in the front of the vehicle. Neither was responsive until the police arrived. In the back seat, the female in the back seat was the female's 1-year-old child. The adults were charged with possession of drug paraphernalia and engagement endangerment of a child, both misdemeanors. They were needless. There were needles laying all over inside of the car, and one occupant had a large amount of Suboxone, enough to be charged with a felony. The driver was not charged with DUI or physical control, and neither was charged with a felony for drugs. Both will probably be released from jail by the end of the weekend. Thank God CPS took the child. I know I'm the devil for thanking God for separating this child from its mother. I'm actually not. That's the reality. Now, I wanted to check your privilege real quick. Like, we always need to check our privilege. I know this is entertainment. Well, I mean, this show, I don't know how entertaining it is, but I know what I'm about to play comes from an entertainment-based show. But culture swims upstream of politics. Andrew Breitbart. There's a program apparently inspired by a Marvel's Cloak and Dagger. Apparently kids have achieved some sort of power, although it's not like Wonder Twins. Remember Wonder Twins? See, there you go. There was a wholesome hero movie or cartoon. So these two characters, Tandy and Tyrone. Tandy is played by Olivia Holt, or whoever that is, and Tyrone by Aubrey Joseph. Tyrone is an African-American character. Tandy is a white character. They finally decide to have a real discussion about their new magical abilities. And they get into discussion about their lives and their powers. And it comes to a head when the young woman, Tandy, admits that she's had thoughts of suicide, which gets into a social justice warrior conversation about privilege. Now, the young woman who is the character here, the white young woman, she comes from a drug-addicted mother. She has a dead father. She has no way to support herself. Whereas Tyrone, the African-American young man, is middle class, attends private school, has both parents at home. And here's how the conversation goes.
Let me check your privilege.
My privilege? I was just dropped off by a cop who told me that I can't press charges against a guy who almost... I've had a lot of things taken from me. And everything I have, I've had to steal because...
Because you can. You can walk into any room in this world and never be questioned. Try walking into a department store looking like me.
That's not fair because I don't
think... The world does. This whole country's trying to kill me every day.
There you go, from Marvel. What we're led to believe from that scene is that if you're white, it doesn't matter that your dad is dead. It doesn't matter that your mom is drug addicted. It doesn't matter that you just got dropped off by the police and they told you you don't get to report a guy who tried to rape you. It doesn't matter. None of those things matter. The only thing that matters is skin. Now, let me reverse this. Does that mean that the only thing that matters is skin? Because you don't get to do it in the negative and not do it in the positive. So do we go now to, and this is going to be politically incorrect as hell. Ready? I guess I get to go to basketball players and go, yeah, you're pretty good, but you're black. Right? Fair enough. I mean, let's be honest. You're black, so why wouldn't you be good at basketball? I mean, you're black. And my kid's a great football player. Well, you know, John, you're black. So in reality, my kid's better because my kid's white. We don't want to go this way. We don't want to go this way as a society. And we don't want to pretend that privilege is bestowed upon all of us just because of the skin color, because it absolutely nullifies the situations that we all come from. And what we come from together is a human struggle.
And that is the thing that can combine us. That is the thing that can unite us. All of us face trials. When the trials are negated, so are the successes. All right, speaking of trials, what is it like to be a conservative woman working in liberal media Seattle? What are those trials like? My guests will join us next, Christine Cisneros, radio show host. We'll talk about what it's like to be years in the Seattle media circles as a conservative, somewhat closeted conservative. What is it like? Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show. It's bumper music by request. Only a few more shots to get that in there. 800-465-8770 from the text line. Hi, Todd. If gender is a social construct and can be fluid, what about skin color? Both are based on DNA and a few hormones. This is all relative? Yeah, I mean, look, once you start saying that you are who you think you are, your species is up to you as well. Joining me in your race in the radio studio, Christine Cisneros is a host of the Confessional Radio Show. And we had a conversation. She called me. She's a listener to the show. I want you to know she also brought me a great gift for firearms at home. So that's a heck of a studio warming gift. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You called me to talk, I guess, as a fellow conservative, a fellow media person. You've been in this longer than I have. You've been a conservative in Seattle media circles longer than I have. What's it been like for you all these years?
Well, that's very generous of you to say media circles, because yeah. I've been on the air for 7 years on 1150 AM KKNW. It's a very liberal station. I had considered leaving a couple of times just because the heat got hot, right? Yeah. Especially around the Trump election, the election for President Trump, and some of the choices, some of the things I was saying. I have not always been a conservative. I was by de facto a liberal Democrat. I'm gay. I'm Hispanic. I'm a woman. I'm middle-aged now.
Yeah.
There's all those things that people say, oh, this country's so sexist, it's so genderist, it's so everything-ist. But the one thing that I find is that I find that, no, this country isn't that way. And during the last administration, prior to this, I started to wake up. I'm like, these are all things I'm hearing, but these don't feel right. Something doesn't feel right here.
Really?
Absolutely. And when I started to really look into it, I never really identified with the gay community as far as like, this is my community and we have each other's back. And I lived on Capitol Hill for 13 years. I DJed in Seattle for 20 years. I had people over my house constantly, and I never quite felt comfortable. And I don't think it was because of people. I think people are lovely. I think we are all God's design. I think it's because there was such a pumping in of all these ideas of how we were so put upon, how we suffer so, how there's just no end to this, whitey and, religious right and all these things that I never investigated because it was just taken for granted. We all just thought, yeah, that's why things are bad. And when the last administration came in, one thing I saw was that the Obama election, both elections, the most incredible thing about that story was he did nothing and he became president. Yeah. He just said a bunch of stuff. It's kind of like when kids go and they get trophies for not really winning.
Right.
It seemed like that was on a national level. It was really starting to take off. And I just felt it in me. I've always wanted to have a talk show. And all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I've got to do something. We all have to do something with what we have.
So I guess, you know, we talked to a gentleman the other week who's a gay man and has been obviously he's been a gay man his whole adult life, been a militant leftist marching against guns, etc. He described a red pill moment. You were describing a red pill moment. What was there a singular moment where you said, oh, my God, I might be conservative?
Yes, and this is going to really blow you away.
Yeah.
And first of all, I just want to say thank you, because when I called you, I was having a really low day in that all of that mess of taking the heat. So thank you so much, Todd.
Yeah.
But this is going to blow you away. I actually was told that I was a conservative at a gay pride parade.
Wow.
So I went, you know how they have all the tents and everything, yeah. And you go, and this was actually back when it was in Volunteer Park, where you go out and you hang out up there and you look at all the tents and stuff. And, oh, you like to take a little test. So I did. And well, you realize you're conservative. And immediately I was like, you're crazy, you're kookalooka, that doesn't fit. I don't know what you're trying to do here, I'm leaving. But the more I went along, the more I realized and reflected on that in the years that went by, the more I saw that I did want to protect my family. I did want to contribute to society. I did not believe that you should get something for nothing. My taxes, where are they going? Particularly in Seattle. We have all these things that are happening around us. And for people that kind of woke up about some of these things a little bit earlier on, you start to see, oh, I see what's going on. I see the pattern. I'm pulling on the thread. I see where this is going. But for people who are just starting to wake up, that they don't want to work as slaves, that they don't want 80% of their money to go to places that they have no idea where they're going or don't believe in. I don't believe in paying for shoot-up clinics. I don't believe in paying for transgender bathrooms. I don't believe in the fact that just because people believe that I have such an opposition just by being gay or Hispanic or a female. I don't believe in any of that. What I believe in is we live in a country where we don't, even the people, like I just visited Texas. I just came back from the great state of Texas and I was visiting my brother and his friends. And you know what? I come from a large military family and police family. And these people, some of them don't agree with the way I live my life. And sometimes I don't agree with the way they live theirs, but they are willing to lay down their lives for me. What more do you want? That woke me up and I knew I had to do something.
So now that you have taken the red pill and you've recognized that you're conservative, what are the worst things you with liberal friends have that people assume about us as you look back on your time in the tribe, the other tribe? What are the worst things they assume about us?
Well, first of all, the loss of liberal friends, quote, you know, it's like Johnny Cash says, I can't lose a friend I didn't have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I quote, lost some friends by voting the way I did, by voting for Trump, by having these conservative ideas. So that's the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened and continues to happen to this day is I find this to be absolutely sexist, absolutely genderist, absolutely homophobic. And that is when people expect something else to come out of my mouth.
Yeah, so they expect, okay, I'm looking at a gay Hispanic woman.
Right.
So you must be liberal.
Right.
So or you must be socialist. So they almost expect it in terms of entitlement or DNA, and they can't understand that single issue of gayness, and it shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
That's not where it's at. Would you ever want to force someone to perform a wedding for you?
Absolutely not. And let me tell you, I called those bakery owners and I apologized to them. I apologize. As a gay woman and also on behalf of humanity that we've and as an American, look, we've come to this point where we have all this freedom. You would never go to a Muslim bakery and ask for a gay wedding cake, would you? You would. And as far as like this whole border thing that we've heard all this last week, let me tell you something. When you go, if you went to go rob a bank, would you take your kids with you? No, because you'd be automatically separated from them. These are all ways in which our responsibility is as humans, and then Americans, that we are saying it's somebody else's fault that I did something bad and I should be compensated, or I have this very strange addiction and I should have a place to go do that, or I identify as this gender, and so everyone else has to pay for my stuff. And I find that, you know, that is incredibly demeaning, not just to me, but it's demeaning to the new consciousness on the planet, the kids that are coming up, because what's being taken, what you cannot replace with money, is their dignity, is their self-esteem, by not knowing that they create their own lives. If we can't have that be the premise where we all come from, we have a country that is the greatest country on this planet. Why? Not because we're perfect, but because we have the ability to make things really good. People do not come here and die getting into this or getting out of this country. They sometimes die trying to get in here.
When you take away, and Christine Cisneros is with me, works at a overall liberal radio station, and we've been talking about that that situation, but also a gay Hispanic woman who's taken the red pill, and I find that very interesting. Christine, when we take from someone the right to fail, by virtue of guaranteeing success, we take from them the right to learn from experience. We take from them the ability to be etched into something more by the dents we get.
Yeah, I call it a spiritual, political, emotional, sometimes even a physical lobotomy. Because you're not removing an organ. You're just creating a way for there to be an obstruction large enough for someone not to realize that they can enact all of these things that our country has for people that people come from all over the planet to come do.
Yeah. And I regard what you're doing as very brave because you knew it would lead to a loss of friendship. But let me ask you, and we've got about 1 minute here. Overall, how do you now grade the president in his performance?
Well, you know, at first I was a little doubtful, like what's going to happen with this? I mean, I liked Trump as a businessman. Yeah. He's not perfect, but I have fallen in love with him. Yeah. And I absolutely adore how he kind of does things. And in his way in which he goes about some of these things that he's accomplishing. But the biggest thing I really enjoy about our president right now is that he has respect for the office, he has respect for the people, he loves his country, and he believes in the people. And I think we need to start believing in ourselves.
Well, you're really out of the tribe now.
I know.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'd like to have you back on, and maybe you should you know, quit over there and come over here.
I would love the opportunity to do that, but yeah. I appreciate you having me on because it has given me such a boost and just such a great way in which I just believe in what you're doing, Todd.
Well, you're very kind, and the feeling is mutual.
Thank
and
you so
I appreciate
much.
It, Christine Cisneros. My favorite part of the show, your letters and emails, longer forms of communication with the show. You can always email us, therman@ktth.com, or hit me up on the Facebook page with a private note there. We do the tweets throughout the show, at Toddy Herman, and of course the text line, brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution, Greg Nunn, 800-465-8770. Start off with the Hall of Fame member, Jay Payne. Dear Mr. Herman, why do Prague Socks construct fences around their own homes or lock their doors? Why are some people renting their garments at the sight of children being detained in special daycare centers as their criminal parents are processed, while these enlightened people simultaneously claim the right to nonchalantly slaughter innocent children by the millions at their whim? Is there a moral difference between building a wall meant to keep innocent people imprisoned and oppressed versus a wall constructed to keep criminals from infiltrating to victimize the innocent? Does American civilization, in order to peacefully thrive, really require an ever-growing flood of aliens who have no intention of assimilating to the laws and ideals of our civilization? Is it not slightly odd that 17 years on from the massacre of 9/11, the Congress still refuses to reform the immigration system and seal our national border, yet instead they've instituted a massive surveillance and groping of innocent Americans and render us a pinata for goodies for invading aliens? What are we going to do about a mega-corrupt Congress that, in order to grow their powers over us, will always ensure a porous border and avoid prosecution of illegal aliens in order to provide a constant flood of depressed labor to those who bankroll their campaigns and to provide fresh voting victims that will cement them in their positions of power? Which signs should we look for, exactly, that herald our arrival to the glittering promised land of Progtopia? Just asking, Splinter is coming. Jefferson Payne. Splinter. Splinter's here, Jay Payne, to be honest with you. And we're living in a state of cold civil war right now. I've been saying it for a long time. In fact, next hour, I'm going to go through how to start a civil war. We're almost there. I'm not saying that the shooting starts in our lifetime. I pray to the Lord on my knees it never starts. But this is how you'd start it. I'll get into that next hour in detail. How do you do it? Because it's being done as we're watching. And it's people in power believe they can build monsters they can control, and they believe that their Frankensteins won't turn on them. It's just the most remarkable thing. It's so consistent. Bob from Bainbridge Island. Hey, Todd, I enjoyed the segment you did with a small restaurant and bar owner about how the head tax would literally affect every business in some way, thus every consumer. Business simply has to pass costs or their taxes onto the consumer in order to stay in business. Thus, this tax would affect every single one of us. Here's my alternative for the city to consider. Rather than affecting every one of us, propose the following to Seattle's richest: Gates, Ballmer, Bezos, Schultz, et al. Each of them make a $10 million commitment for 2 years, $10 million each year. The council will form a task force to confront homelessness as they see it. The donors are free to sit on an advisory board. The task force will set measurable and attainable goals, which will be independently reviewed. If at the end of 2 years the task force has not achieved stated goals, it will be disbanded. Else, the council expects Seattle's riches to continue to participate in making Seattle a better place. It's not one iota of taking money from the rich, but as opposed to hurting everyday citizens. Oh, pardon me. I'm not one iota for taking money from the rich. But as opposed to hurting every citizen, these folks wouldn't feel it. And they probably do want to donate money somehow anyway. The council would have the opportunity to silence the critics that say they just want money with no accountability, and they solicited donations rather than decreeing a tax. The rich can say they attempted to help out. Of course, I believe this will fail, but it's another story. Really enjoy your show. Keep up the good work, Bob. Bob from Bainbridge, great idea. Let me modify it with something that I suggested a little while ago. You really want to get this solved? Get the city out of the way. city can do one thing to solve this, that is to remove the street people. There's someone out there, I think, cooking up a hit piece on me to go after me for calling folks street people. I see all the signs, people asking weird questions and using pseudonyms and pretending to be this or that person, trying to get me to respond on the record to admit that I don't have any data that shows street people want to be street people. Yeah, I got data. I have data of new people moving in here. Seattle Times has published that. The data I have comes from working with street people who told me I choose this lifestyle. Yep, my former friend, Dan Rickard, who's died, told me. He taught me the ways of street people. He taught me the nomenclature and he taught me the pecking order. He taught me how to eat garbage burgers, where to find them, how to go get food that's thrown out of restaurants. And he told me why he personally chose that lifestyle, which killed him eventually. It did kill him. So please, let's look at it this way. This was the idea I proposed. The city should solicit donations to the Union Gospel Mission. They can do one thing. The city, get rid of the street people. You do that by enforcing the laws. That'll take care of 40% of the problem right there. Second step, the city, using your idea, soliciting donations, but solicit it to the Union Gospel Mission and the Compass Center. Not Wheel, not Share, not any of the poverty pimping groups. Groups who actually work to get people off the street. From Tacoma, David. Hey, Todd, sad that straws will be illegal in Seattle for people wanting to buy a milkshake from a restaurant in order to save wildlife. But you can still get needles provided by the city to do drugs and leave them out for children to play with our parks. Mayor Jenny, I'm glad Seattle has elected her to handle the tough decisions. A lot of people making that comparison and it's spot on. It's absolutely spot on. Here's my question to Mayor Jenny. If I went and bought some hypodermic needles and took the sharp part off and the little plug off or the pump off, it's a tube, right? I'm going to buy some of those and I'm going to start sucking soda pop out of it. I don't drink soda pop. I'm going to start sucking water out of it. It's not a straw, right? It's a needle. Those are legal, right, Jenny? Closing's off today with Peter from Federal Way. Hello, Todd. I want to make a comment on the illegal immigration at the border. My family came from the USSR. My parents put in for refugee status in 1976, and we didn't emigrate legally into the U.S. until 1989, when we had a sponsor. During those 13 years, my family was routinely called spies for the U.S. government. When we arrived in the States, we worked alongside migrant workers in apple orchards and flower fields. Moved to Spokane in the early 90s, and we were on public assistance for a short time. My dad went to college and completed a trade program at Spokane Community College, then applied this trade for the last 20 years until retiring this past year. Since then, all of us have grown up, started businesses, purchased and built homes, pay taxes, and contribute to the economy. There is a right way and a wrong way to get into the country. Why should we lower our standards for those who choose not to follow our country's laws? Thanks for your time. Peter, great story. And God bless your dad, working hard and doing what he did. Welcome. We're glad to have you here, man. Awesome to have you on board the country. I'd love to hear about the experiences in the USSR. You'd be the third or fourth Russian immigrant who has contacted us on this. And you're exactly right. The pride in that, the process is good for you. It's good for us. It shows that we're selective in who we want in the country. But also that reward is something you've earned. When you earn something, you treat it with more respect than when it's given you or when you're taught that you're owed it. Right now, the left is teaching illegal immigrants that they are owed amnesty. They're owed benefits here. They don't appreciate that that way. Your folks, Peter, obviously they appreciated it because they had to earn their way in. We'll come back from the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and the Greater East Side 94.5 FM. Our good friend Glenn Morgan. He's the guy who has standing, legal standing, to sue Sideshow Bob, our part-time attorney general, on your behalf, on behalf of the state of Washington. Also, Smack Daddy Dal Constantine. We'll get an update from him on that. And I have an idea on how I might be able to help Glenn find a lawyer willing to sue Sideshow, who holds a lot of power as he pretends to be the attorney general. That next on the Todd Herman Show.